the OTB Podcast Network. This Saturday panel on OTB.
We had zero training. I mean none. We were just picked from our provinces, put in a plane and sent down in front of 50,000 people. We took a 5-0 lead against Serevi's Fiji and they managed to beat us 56-5.
Don't miss the panel every Saturday afternoon on OTB Sports Radio. Tune in 24/7 on the OTB Sports app.
OTB AM.
With Gillette, proud supporters of Movember. Gentlemen, let's move.
Right, David Moyler, good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning.
Have you seen the new Ireland jersey yet?
I have, yeah.
Do you like it?
I do. I think it's smart. It's not like flash. I do like it. I need to pick it up for my kids. Yeah.
I like the away jersey. Well, you can enter our competition this morning. Our mystery voice, last opportunity for people to enter it. Who's this?
When their guy came up, I think his name was Tim Offday. Tim Offday, his name was, who took the penalty.
087-9180-180 is the number. You know who that is, right?
Well, it's Andy Townsend. Yeah, the more entries, the better, isn't it? Yeah.
Oh, man. You're just about the right age to have had Andy Townsend as an idol, right? Are you too
I
young?
Really...
No.
Jesus. Yeah, I am. You think Andy played, what, in USA 94 and that, and then kind of played mid to late 90s with Villa and that. Like, yeah, I was young. You look at me, like, I speak more about Steven Gerrard, Roy Keane, so Andy would have been a bit older. But obviously I know who he was, how he played. Fantastic player. I think we've given the answer to everyone, haven't we?
We have. I'm disappointed that you're that young. Jesus. But I think he's underrated as great Irish midfielders go. But look, we don't have time to get into that today. Let's get into Manchester United and the scenario that they find themselves in. Midweek, we had our regular Manchester United people on, and they were as happy as they've ever been because their midweek record is absolutely sensational. I think they've won 16 out of their last 17 midweek games. Their European record is excellent. Their performances were good. The squad looked to have depth. They have one of the best young attacking players in the world. And today, 4 days on, we're talking about the manager potentially getting sacked because Pochettino's in the Sky Studios tonight. This is a wild situation that Manchester United find themselves in at the moment.
No, definitely. I actually watched the game midweek against Leipzig. And I think anyone with an open mind would have realised it wasn't the result wasn't right. Like, it was almost like, you know, Leipzig made subs. I think they brought in the young boy Sabitzer, and they just kind of fell apart, and United just went boom, bosh, bang, like, you know, adding the third, fourth and fifth and whatever, and it just kind of took off. I don't think the performance was very good, but it wasn't, the scoreline didn't suggest it was a dominant performance of the way it was. But then, like, the big tough thing is, you know, he switches to the diamond, he kind of squeezes them all in during the week, and then it's like, what do we do? Do you know, when we play Arsenal? And then they think, well, we're at home, we should be on the front foot. And then it was just the complete opposite. It was just a lackluster performance. I think there was just no spark, no energy. Obviously, there's been a lot of stuff highlighted about the players, you know, not motivating themselves or whatever. But it was just... it was just a very, very bad day at the office. And look, managers are, you know, judged on results. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is going to be under savage pressure. I just heard Owen speaking there a second ago, like talking about Pochettino's on the telly tonight. I can't remember the last time I saw Pochettino, and usually a manager, or if he's not employed at the time, does appear on telly somewhere kind of to say, look, I'm about, I'm available. I've had my little, you know, gardening leave. I've had my holiday. I've spent time with the family. I want back in now. So maybe he's putting his name forward to say, look, I'm available and I'm out there if you want to come and get me.
It seems that way. And all he has to do is answer a few questions about team shape and his own experience. And all of a sudden people will be comparing, contrasting. And maybe it's not fair, but like... at the same time, right, Manchester United are in this cycle of manager comes in, makes some changes, does okay for a while, things fall apart a little bit, new manager comes in, does okay, makes some changes, signs some players, and then it's just this constant, perpetual change. I get that if Solskjaer is the wrong guy, then you have to make the change, but Do they know if Solskjaer is the wrong guy just yet?
I think the, probably the biggest thing, the biggest problem Manchester United have is you look at the previous managers before Solskjaer with the Mourinho and Van Gaal, two big, you know, characters in the game of football. I'd say they wanted things their own way. I think there's probably a level of control with Solskjaer from higher up inside. Now, I don't know this firsthand, but you kind of get this idea that, you know, Solskjaer has been through the system, obviously spending so long of his career there with Sir Alex, and then now he's at the point where, you know, he's not getting the players he wanted to sign originally. You look at there has to be massive question marks raised over Donny van de Beek, you know, spending 40 million and he's not playing regular football. I know we did touch on that last week about Pogba and whatever, but, you know, he wanted Sancho. It doesn't happen. There was talks that he wanted Grealish. It doesn't happen. And then it's almost as if somebody in the board or someone higher up has kind of said, well, hold on a minute, you're lucky to be in this job. Whereas I think with Mourinho and Van Gaal and those fellas were a bit like, well, no, I want these players. These are the players we're going after, kind of thing. It's just so difficult. And now Pochettino is going to be, his name's going to be touted everywhere. Even like, as you said, midweek, you have a huge win in the Champions League. Everything is great. We're turning the corner. And then you go and you lose to Arsenal, who haven't beaten Manchester United in 14 years, as Owen touched on as well. You know, it's the first time Arsenal won away at a top, inverted commas, top six side in the last, you know, 5 years. It's kind of like Arsenal yesterday, the big thing about the game yesterday was Arsenal had a game plan and they stuck to it and they executed it. Every player kind of knew their role. Manchester United just looked like they didn't know what to do. They had no plan B. They kept trying to play out from the back. All great, keeping the ball. But then, you know, you've got Fred McTominay dropping down by the centre-halves. And it's kind of like they haven't even broken the first line of the press that, you know, you're going nowhere. And they just turned over possession so many times. And, you know, it's frustrating for me as a football fan to watch because they do have some very, very good players. Do you know, and there's cases to call a few of them world class or up in that bracket of maybe not the best in their position, but certainly in the top five, six, seven, you know, and they just look out of sorts, and inevitably that's going to fall back at the manager's door. And that's the sad reality of it, because, you know, the manager counts on the players. You can talk about tactics and whatever, but once the game, you know, once the game starts or that first whistle is blown, the players have got to perform. And at the moment, Man United are too hot and cold. They're too inconsistent.
Do you put any weight in the tactics then yesterday? Like, when should you play a diamond? And was yesterday the game to play that in?
Look, the diamond had worked for them. So you can't knock that. If, you know, if it's not broke, don't fix it. It had worked during the week against the good side who just capitulated in the second half. But I get the point of them playing the same formation. But, you know, if you go back 2 weeks ago when they played Paris Saint-Germain, Ollie played whatever way you want to, you know, dress it up, the three at the back, the five at the back with the wing backs where Telles and Wan-Bissaka played and whatever, and they were fantastic. And then on the hour mark when PSG were starting to get a bit of foothold in the game, like, he switches, he brings Pogba on, and then, like, I was one of the first ones to applaud him. You know, people said Pogba changed the game, but I think it was the tactical change, and he got that one spot on. But then yesterday there was no change in the kind of like, we need to do something different. You know, you look at the first substitutions, he changes Matic for, you know, McTominay, Fred and all them, he's changing holding midfielder. There was no kind of, why not go to three at the back and try and pile more, you know, fellas forward or something. You know, it was just, you've got to hold your hands up when you get it wrong, and the tactics were wrong yesterday. But also at the same time, like, the players didn't perform. They turned over possession too much, you know, too much. Obviously, the majority of us would have watched it on Sky. You see Jamie Redknapp highlighting. Like, you think if you go to Old Trafford and you have, you know, a minute 50 is what he quoted on the ball, where you're knocking around and you're able to sustain attack after attack against Manchester United, that's unheard of. If you go back over the years of the teams they had, even going back to, like, 2-3 years ago, that didn't happen. And that's the probably the worry for me, is that there was a lack of intensity in them. There was no, I know the Manchester United and Arsenal games aren't the same of the old ones where we watch Keane and Vieira going toe to toe, but there was just nothing. You look at, you know, Thomas Partey yesterday coming in, and he had a field day. you know, I think if any young midfielder wants to learn a game, like watch how he played, the positions he took up. He looked like he never got out of third gear. You know, he was just comfortable, you know, breaking up play, getting on the ball, dictating the pace of it. And that was the worrying thing, to go for a midfielder to go to the Premier League, or go to Old Trafford, sorry, in the Premier League, and to be able to dictate a game. That was the worrying thing. But, you know, Manchester United today are going to, you know, they're going to sit down, they'll probably watch the game back 2-3 times, and they're going to, you know, analyse it, and they've got to, you know, solve these problems.
Can I ask you about that Arsenal performance then? Because you mentioned Thomas Partey, who obviously he's going to get picked out for an unbelievable performance. Like, where is that dial after Mikel Arteta at the moment, where he can start pushing it towards being a little bit more offensive? Because it's going to be a full month in the Premier League now without scoring from open play.
No, of course. Look, like, Arsenal haven't been fantastic this season. They've lost games, but I think they're starting... I think the big thing for Manchester United fans and Arsenal fans, it looks like Arsenal have a direction in which they want to go in. You know, we can obviously highlight Thomas Partey. He was excellent yesterday. Like I said, everything he did was... You can see why he played at Atletico Madrid and why Diego Simeone loved him. You know, Simeone came out after and said he didn't want to lose him, but there was a clause, and once the clause is met, it's kind of out of the, you know, the... out of the club's hands. It's really down to the player. But like everything from Arsenal yesterday, you look at Gabriel, centre half, he was fantastic. Kieran Tierney looks like, you know, a bargain for 25 million. And then of course, the big thing, like you've still got Lacazette, Aubameyang, they've got good players. Of course, look, they want to be scoring more, you know, more goals in open play, but they seem to have a direction which they want to go in. And you know, the way they set up, their tactics were spot on. Manchester United couldn't get on the ball, dictate the play. They just kept forcing them into errors and turning over possession. But, you know, Arsenal will be looking to improve going forward because, you know, Aubameyang is a top-class striker and he'll expect to score more goals and he won't want to be scoring penalties every week.
Liverpool on Saturday night was a very interesting case study in what could have been for Liverpool. I mean, Nat Phillips and Jordan Shaqiri, two of the stars of the show, two players who could easily be playing football with different clubs right now. Nat Phillips, how impressed were you with his performance? I think he got man of the match in the end.
He did. He was exceptional. I think the way they probably dressed up was they probably expected Mikel Antonio, and they thought, we need someone who's going to be, Liverpool were thinking, we need someone who's going to be strong, physical in the air, who's going to be able to battle with Antonio. I touched on it with you, with Henderson playing centre-half, that I wasn't a fan of it because I felt that, you know, Antonio, now I know he didn't play in the end, but he would have bullied him in the way that they were going. Like Thomas Haller is still another, or Sebastian Haller, sorry, he's another big, strong fella that, you know, is going to knock. And I think he dealt with it, and everything that came his way, he dealt with. Look, when you're playing at Anfield, you're going to have the lion's share of possession. And everything he did right. And you saw in his post-match interview where he said, it was kind of for me to get up to the speed, but do it simple. You know, he won his headers. He kept it, you know, knocked it wide, just defended well. And I think it was a good all-round performance. But the adrenaline of that game, of being like, you know, his Premier League debut, and it was his second appearance, but it would have been massive. And, you know, it just shows you that Liverpool can rely on other players. But at the same time, it wasn't a glorious performance. It wasn't fantastic. But the big thing is, you touched on there, Shaqiri. Like, Shaqiri looked like his Liverpool career was more or less over. You know, if you look at the back end of last season, he was kind of getting 5 and 10 minutes here. Now, in the last few games, he's really made an impact. Even when he's come on, he's kind of... You always look for substitutes to come on and impact the game or change the game. Can you do something, you know? And you look at Shaqiri coming on, getting the assist for Jota's goal. I know Jota also had one for, you know, ruled out. And it is massive because now Liverpool to me look like, certainly like, say, a team of champions where they're winning even though they're not playing the free-flowing, you know, football that we're used to from the front three or whatever. It's not firing at all cylinders for them, but they're finding ways to win, which is the most important thing. Because at the end of the day, if you look back at last year when Liverpool won the Premier League, if you asked me Liverpool's opening 6 fixtures, you know, you wouldn't remember. You know, those games at Christmas when they had to battle it out, you know, on your Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday. People don't remember them. It's just they remember that Liverpool won the Premier League. And it certainly feels to me like they're finding ways to win.
Yeah, it's kind of mad, isn't it? That, like, it's such a credit to Klopp, I think, in this regard, that he basically came out. I know he said it with Phillips publicly, I'd be happy enough for him to leave, and like he could be playing with Bolton now, for example.
Yeah.
And he basically was the same with Shaqiri. The message was loud and clear that you are not in the immediate plans of this club. And they still put in a performance like that. That ability to bring a player back into the fold and put the trust in the player, and the trust the player feels back. Like, again, you can't say enough good things about Klopp in recent years, but he does deserve credit for that, you feel?
No, 100%. Like, with Shaqiri and him coming out, it's kind of like, look, Shinji Shaqiri will want to play week in, week out. He'll feel he's good enough. You know, he'll feel he's good enough to play week in, week out for Liverpool. That's the, you know, that's the type of character. That's why you're in the game, to play week in, week out. He doesn't want to be sitting on the bench. And he's probably had, you know, conversations with Klopp behind closed doors where he said, I want to play more. And he said, look, I can't guarantee you the minutes. I'm happy for you, you know, to look elsewhere if you want. And Shaqiri's probably turned and gone, do you know what? I want to stay. I want to fight for my place. Do you know, it's Liverpool have that good environment, you know, obviously they've had, which comes from the success they've had but within the Premier League and the Champions League, where these fellas have, you know, got a taste of it and they don't want to lose it. And you look at fellas like Shaqiri, they want to stay there and they want to battle. And then when you, the biggest thing is when you get opportunities, whether they be 5, 10, 15 minutes, you've got to make an impact. And that's the big thing. Shaqiri is, Jota is. Like, there's... Liverpool's front three have been untouched for, you know, the last 3-4 seasons. Yeah. But now Jota, there's question marks now. Can Jota start? Do, you know, do we accommodate and put Mane or Salah through the middle and, you know, swap and change and then fit Jota in to drop Firmino? That's, Liverpool have never had that problem because it has always been that front three. But now, I suppose if every Liverpool fan loves watching Firmino play, he's fantastic at what he does. Like, in my opinion, he's one of the best in the world at what he does. But at the same time, I have to be realistic. He's not scoring enough goals. Like, for a striker that's playing in a team that's winning, he needs to be scoring double digits every season. And he's not getting enough goals.
Do you think then that, like, that front three is under real threat from Jota? Like, is the lack of goals not made up with everything else he does?
I think if you want to be, you know, champions year after year, if they want to be winning trophy after trophy, you need your front three firing at all cylinders. I even look at, you know, the midfielders. Probably Fabinho is the only one that would get out of it, but certainly your Wijnaldum, Henderson, Thiago, those ones who might play a little bit more advanced. Yes, of course, Thiago does like to play a little bit deeper at times, but if Fabinho and Thiago play, you'd be expecting them to get at least 5 goals a season. You know, and I'd be certainly looking that someone like a Wijnaldum, who's, you know, scores big goals in big games, but he should be aiming for, you know, double digits nearly. Do you know, if you look at a team like Liverpool who creates so much, so then the question goes back to, I wouldn't say Mane and Salah are under threat. I don't even want to say it, because the one I love the most is Firmino, and I know that the work he does is so underrated that people don't appreciate it. It's not like, people are quick to compare him to, say, Harry Kane or whatever, that you look at the goals Harry Kane scores, whether they be penalties or not. You know, Harry Kane is still chalking out 20 goals a season. But it's a new one for Jurgen, that he has someone who really is, with Jota, he's really knocking on the door to say, like, he's putting his hand up, because, look, the games he's played, whether he started or come off the bench, he's really made a difference. And it does look like a fantastic signing.
Is he a centre forward? Is he the same type of player? Is he a 9?
No, I don't think he's a 9, but I do think, like, he can play left side or right side. So then they're going to swap. You know, they're going to put Salah through the middle or Mane through the middle and work that way. We saw that in the Champions League when he came on. You know, Mane went through the middle. So inevitably it will be Jota for Firmino, but it will be a change in the sense that it will be, you know, Mane will have to move into the middle or Salah will have to move into the middle.
We might just finish up on Chelsea here, David, just because a very interesting tactical shift on Saturday. They moved to a 4-3-3, Mount, Kante and Havertz, the midfield three, but Hakim Ziyech up front just looked unreal. You had Tammy Abraham dropping deep as more of a withdrawn number 9, with Werner and Ziyech in more advanced roles. Ziyech gets the headlines. What did you make of his performance, and how sustainable is this? Because he is the one that people have been saying in recent weeks, wait for him to get into the team and then Chelsea will really start rolling.
No, he's... Look, I'm not going to sit here and say I've watched him 100 times. I watched him enough with Ajax in the Champions League that he is a special player. It's his ability to drift, you know, in between the midfield and defence, kind of, you know, coming deep, getting the ball. You know, he can create. That's the thing. He can see a pass. He certainly can dribble. And of course, look, you saw from, you know, the game against Burnley, he can score. I think the big thing at that performance was, like obviously you said there, Frank switched to 4-3-3, but it's actually playing N'Golo Kante as the, you know, the deep line playmaker. He inevitably got rid of Jorginho, dropped him, and then Havertz and Mount, like, they just looked better. Mount certainly, you know, looked more dynamic. If you look, there was many things, you know, highlighted of him in his performance, getting on the ball, dictating play, spreading it. I just think if you have a player like N'Golo Kante, like, I'm not the manager of Chelsea, I don't see him day in, day out, but I can't see him being a problem. But he looks to me like the one that you just have to play him there, because he's been lauded by, you know, current players, ex-players, managers as the best holding midfielder in the world. And when he plays there, he just gives Chelsea such a good balance at, you know, turning over possession, winning the ball back, keeping it simple, which then, like you said, you can get the ball forward to your Ziyeches and those type of players where they can go and create and make something happen. And, you know, Ziyech was excellent. You know, he has two goals in his last two games. Obviously, he had that, he struggled with, I think it was a knee injury. But I wouldn't even say Ziyech is up to full speed yet. I think it'll be another 2-3 games for him playing in the Premier League to finally, you know, get a good understanding of it. And I think he'll be an exceptional signing for Chelsea.
Yeah, it's a pretty scary prospect for the rest of the league. David, great to have you with us this morning. Thanks a million.
OTB AM
with Gillette, proud supporters of Movember. Gentlemen, let's move. That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.